It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Wow, such a great line from the movie The Matrix. And speaking of which, we're here with our professor of the Borg, Bob Poldowski, explaining to us some of the common lies on which we as a group, as a society, as a culture rely upon. It's not just that we accept them. It's that we rely upon them. And we're relying on smoke many times. And so if you want to sit on that chair made out of smoke, get ready to feel some butt pain because you're going down. And that's what I am fascinated with your conversation here today, Bob. I really do thank you for coming on board with us. So now you had another concept you wanted to throw at us. Please do.
Okay, I want to talk briefly about what is an ethic, because ethics are much talked about and very little understood. When I was a young man, I thought the subject of ethics was trivial, had no importance whatsoever in the real world, and I couldn't have been more wrong. I think now that it's the most important subject that anyone can learn. So let's start out real fast. What is an ethic? Well, every ethic is composed of two parts. One part is a value. It is something you want more of in your life, or something you want to maximize. And it could be anything. In that sense, ethics are arbitrary because you can pick anything you want to be the thing that you want to maximize. And that's why people say, oh, ethics are arbitrary. Not so. The second part of every ethic is a belief system that presumes to tell you what you have to do in order to get more of what you value. And so every ethic combines these two things, and no set of rules can replace an ethic, okay? You cannot write a rule that covers all situations. You cannot write a rule or a set of rules which will anticipate every possible circumstance where you need to apply your ethic. But the ethic is real, and ethics are really simple. Another fact about ethics that most people don't know is that there are valid ethics and there are invalid ethics. Now, what does that mean? Well, a valid ethic is an ethic which, if you do what the belief system prescribes, you get the thing that you value. That's a valid ethic. An invalid ethic is one where you do the thing that the belief system tells you to do, and you don't get the thing you value. And in many cases, you get the opposite. A good example, this country was founded on the ethic of maximizing freedom. That was the value. The belief system was that a government in a particular form could maintain people's freedom.
Well, we're going to another break, but we'll be back with a longer one in just a minute. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of this. Maximum liberty, minimum law. That should be our ethic.
And girls make me sing and shout. That Georgia's always on.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Well, surprise, surprise, you went and relied on that Ernest Hancock nonsense, and there you have it. But you got me, Barry Hess, sitting in for the vacationing Ernest Hancock. We are on today with physicist, psychoanalyst, and an anarchist, who also seems to be a well-presented man. I appreciate that. Bob Poldowski, he was explaining to us about ethics and rules and, of course, some of the common comforting lies on which so many people rely. Well, of course, we're the ones here trying to uncover the secrets and expose the lies here on Declare Your Independence on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're going to get back to Bob. He's going to share with us some more of his views on what are ethics and what are the rules and laws, and do they interrelate at all? Because, well, that's just what kind of society we become. Bob, are you still with us?
You bet. I'm right here. And I was in the middle of talking about valid and invalid ethics and the fact that this country was founded on the notion that if we could maximize the value of freedom by relying on a form of law based on the Constitution. And guess what? With only two exceptions, that is, in 2 years, in more than 200, there have only been 2 years when we had more freedom than the year before. One was when women were given the vote, and the other was when the slaves were set free. But every other year since the Constitution was written, we have had less freedom than the year before. So that particular ethic was invalid. It was wrong. And in fact, for those folks out there who are saying, oh, we need to roll back all the laws and just repeal all the laws since the Bill of Rights was written, then everything will be fine. Wrong. Yes, we've had 200 years in which to learn how things can go wrong based on the Constitution, but the perpetrators of the system that we have now have had 200 years to improve their methods of subverting that system. So we'd be, better off for a while than we are now, but it wouldn't solve the problem. And I'm going to suggest a couple of things that conceivably could solve the problem, the big problem that humanity is facing right now.
Excellent.
So if it's all right with you, Barry, I'd like to go ahead and hit on a couple of other topics that are related here.
Fire it up.
Okay, well, first of all, there are valid ethics. And one that I particularly have grown fond of, as I said, every ethic has two parts. The value is creativity and its logical equivalence. Now, why do I say logical equivalence? Well, if you increase creativity, there are other things that increase. And if you diminish creativity, there are things that diminish. And so there are other things than creativity which are logically equivalent when it comes to ethics. For example, love. Okay, access to true information is one. If you increase either of those, creativity increases, and vice versa. If you diminish either of those, creativity diminishes, and vice versa. So there are who knows how many logical equivalents to creativity. One can use truth. I happen to like the word creativity as the value. That's the thing to be preserved. And the belief system for this ethic is the belief that all prosperity, wealth, happiness derived from creativity. And then once you start with that ethic, there are a whole bunch of logical conclusions you can draw from that. One of them is that you cannot achieve ethical ends by unethical means. Another is that self-defense is ethical, providing you don't use more force than is necessary in order to defend yourself, although you can use lethal force if you're threatened lethally and do it ethically. So the idea that we should all turn the other cheek and not defend ourselves, that's not an ethical decision based on the ethic that I just suggested to you. I call it the evolutionary ethic, by the way, because it turns out that if the thing you value and work towards increasing is creativity, then you have an evolutionary process going on. In other words, evolution moves out of the genetic field and into the social organization field. Socially, we haven't evolved very much since the government was invented 8,000 years ago. But this ethic provides the basis of some new hope. And boy, do I know that your listeners need some new hope. Let me point out a couple of things real quick. One is that with a little bit of training, a group of 8 people can make unanimous decisions quite easily. Yeah, we don't learn in grade school how to do that, but we could if it were taught. The know-how exists. The other thing is that if 8 people are committed to only acting ethically as a group, then they will automatically agree that group decisions have to be unanimous or they're not ethical. Mm-hmm. It turns out there was a guy named John David Garcia who did 20 years of research on creativity for groups. He started with a group of 2 and then a group of 3, group of 4, up to about 20. And he found experimentally, scientifically, and verifiably that the optimum size group for any creative endeavor is 8. He also found out it works best if there are 4 men and 4 women in the group. He also found out that it's almost as good if you have 1 extra person or 1 less person. So 7 people or 9 people is okay, not 6 or less, not 10 or more, because then creativity falls off very dramatically. And it's also important that there be no more, that the number of men and women differ by no more than 1. If they differ by 2 or more, you got a problem. You're not going to optimize what happens. And he invented a process for a group of 8 to work on a problem, to solve something, to do something creative together. He called that process autopoiesis, and I participated in some of his research years ago. He's gone now, by the way. He died a few years ago, but his work lives on. And it turns out that a group of 8 can do anything ethical. In other words, you could, instead of starting a corporation, you could start one of these groups of 8. John called them octets. I contributed to the technology by improving the method that he had devised for getting people to work together creatively in this autopoiesis process. So I call the revised version of this kind of group an octologue. That's like a dialogue only, but it's 8 people. Octologue. Now, if 8 people isn't enough to work your project, whatever your project is, you can then have a contract between multiple groups of 8, and there's no limit to how many could join such a group. I call such a contractual concatenation of octologues a holotropic matrix, or holomat for short, a holomat. Anything worth doing that is done today by corporations, by governments, by any kind of group whatsoever could be done more fairly, more ethically, more efficiently, more beneficially by a holomat. My recommendation is that we learn to replace hierarchies with holomats. Huh. This is my best hope for a future for humanity, because I think if we don't do this, we're going to incinerate ourselves or something of the sort.
So, these groups, these octologues and octomats, that's fascinating to me. Well, I'm going to let you keep going. We've got about another minute for you, and then we're going to come back with a seven-minute segment. And then I know you've got to go, and then we're going to take some phone calls, and I'm going to try to answer them on your behalf, so watch out. We'll see if I'm ethical.
Okay. So, basically, the thing with the hierarchy is that hierarchies become bureaucratized almost invariably. There are a few exceptions, but bureaucracy is the systematic elimination, destruction, or avoidance of corrective feedback. That is the nature of bureaucracy. If you have a hierarchic group that doesn't do that, then you don't have a bureaucracy. But most hierarchies become bureaucratized, and because of that, they do very evil things.
Now, you'll want to hold your thought, because if we were going to the break, they're coming in on us. Feeding it. Wow, that's some brilliant thought, Bob. I'm going to look forward to reading your books now. What's going on? Folks, we'll be back on Declare Your Independence with me, your host, Barry Hess, sitting in for Ernest Hancock.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Oh, doesn't that just make you tense your neck muscles up and swing your head back and forth like Ray Charles? Well, we're back here on Declare Your Independence. This is your host, Barry Hess, sitting in for Ernest Hancock with our guest, physicist, psychoanalyst, and obviously an author and a well-thought man. He's given us 11 of the 12 comforting lies our society relies upon, and man, every one of them struck a bone with me. So we'll get back with him. We've just got him for this last short segment, and we'll let him finish his thought. Bob, oh, you're there. I know you are.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Well, what I was suggesting is that one of the most dangerous things in today's world, and one of the most common, is hierarchy itself. Hierarchy was invented simultaneously with government as a means of power brokerage. And because of that, it has a lot of inherently evil features to it. And the fact is, we don't need it. We don't need to have institutions, public institutions, private institutions, or anything composed of hierarchies. They are so easily bureaucratized. They so easily result in people taking advantage of one another, people bullying one another. The list of disadvantages of hierarchy goes on and on. Yeah, it's a simple, efficient way to broker power. But when is it ethical to exercise power over another person? Only in self-defense. There's no other circumstance. Hearing a buzzing noise. Are you still there, Barry?
Oh, I'm here. We don't know what the mysterious little sounds are.
I was afraid I might have lost you there.
Oh, no, you can't get rid of me. I'm like a bad dream. I keep coming around.
So what I'm suggesting is that people learn how to participate in octologues and ultimately in holomats. Because if we can do that, then we can replace every hierarchic organization with an organization that, if there's any value to the organization in the first place, which a lot of them don't have value, but if there is, you know, if an organization is doing something ethical, something creative, something that helps people, they'll do it better as an octologue or for bigger projects as a holomat, and they'll have more fun doing it.
But doesn't somebody organize whether you're going to use the octologue or the holomat? Isn't that in itself a kind of a hierarchy? Somebody's got to make a decision at some point, don't they?
Well, each of us makes decisions. I could decide to organize an octologue.
Mm-hmm.
But the rules of the octologue are that membership is voluntary, and you can quit an octologue anytime you like. And within an octologue, you have veto power. Boy, that's getting loud.
I have no idea of what that is. It might be coming from network.
I'm glad it stopped. Anyway, as a member of an octologue, you have veto power over any group decision that you don't like. Only unanimous decisions are valid in an octologue. Well, making such decisions takes a little training. You know, you didn't learn in grade school to be a member of a hierarchy, but you were subjected to some of the hierarchical methodologies in your family. In fact, children think their parents own them. Then they go off to school and they think their teachers own them. And then they go to work and they think their employers own them. And in reality, nobody owns you but you.
Now we're talking my language. Bob, we are coming up. I know you've got appointments, and you made that real clear. Coming up, you have about a minute left. Please let us know where we can get your books, your website, any information you can get out so our listening audience can take advantage there. And if you do have just a couple of seconds, I was kind of curious about when you said using equal force as self-defense was the only ethical method. A little question about that. Isn't overwhelming response an ethical response?
If you threaten me in some way, and I can stop you from doing it by frowning at you, then for me to do something more physical and damaging to you would be unethical. If I can say something to you that will stop what you're doing, you know, if a frown doesn't work, maybe I can say something to you. If that doesn't work, then we move into physical behaviors. And obviously, one might have to decide in a split second how much force it takes to stop someone from doing something bad to you. But using more force than you perceive to be necessary is not ethical.
Wow.
So unlimited force isn't always ethical.
Some good stuff. Bob, thank you for joining us. We sure appreciate it. Folks, if you want to call in, Bob has got to leave us. We appreciate that more than I could express.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Come, you masters of war. Here that build the big guns. Here that build the death planes. Here that build all the bombs.
Let's build all the bombs and then not use them. Wouldn't that be a great thing? The military-industrial complex is coming after us again. And boy, folks, I got to tell you, wasn't that fun to have Bob on? I got a couple of pages of serious notes, and I hadn't expected that. I think Bob did an outstanding job, and I appreciate him taking his time to share with us some ways to open our minds and maybe think of things just a little differently. I liked his answer. He certainly backed it up on the equal self-defense. My question I wish I had had time to ask him was more along the lines of, well, what if you don't know how much force is being used against you? Say someone shows up at your knocking on your window in the middle of the night on the second floor. You know they're there on purpose, and it can't be a good purpose. Do you suppose that they only have a screwdriver or a pry bar, or do you assume they have a knife and a gun or a ball bat or something? I don't know. I just assume I'm one of those who believes that an immediate and swift response, overwhelming in its nature, is the proper response to anyone who brings on force against you. I'll just have to think and stew on that a little bit. But we've got a caller. I think it's Gary from Alabama. Richard, I apologize. I'm confusing the calls.
It's Rich from Alabama.
Hi, Rich.
I have a quick question. I was listening to the interview, and it's very interesting. And I was thinking back to this movie that I saw a few weeks ago for the first time, and it was controversial here in Huntsville, and it made the news because there were parents that I guess had gone to see the movie with their children, and they were complaining that this movie, and the name of it was called The Watchmen.
Oh, yeah.
They said there was a lot of extreme violence in it, and it was inappropriate for children. Well, eventually, somebody told me that I need to watch this, and I did watch it, and it was so strange, I had to watch it the next day. But I wanted to get your comments on that movie, if you have seen it, and if not, well, I highly recommend people see this movie, and the reason why is because the moral of the story, from what I gathered, is accept world government, or we will release a third world war upon the globe.
Wow.
And I think that kind of intertwines with, I think, what your conversations were in this interview. And I wanted to get some comments from you, if you have seen the movie, or from some other callers that are calling in. Because
Wow.
That's the impression that I got from the movie. It was really intense. And I'm not much of a moviegoer, because I don't like Hollywood and all that stuff, but this was like Wizard of Oz. It was giving some messages subliminally, and that's the first thought that came into my mind, because the Dr. Manhattan was a physicist in this movie, and he also, as far as my interpretation was, he represented the military-industrial complex.
Wow, but
I'd like some comments from you or other callers about my call-in.
Sure.
And that's all I got to say.
You mentioned you're down at Huntsville?
Yes, sir.
Oh, now that's where they have the big Apollo spacecraft out there at night standing up, don't they?
Yes. This is where the rocketry NASA research takes place.
Yeah, I was down, beautiful part of the country. I was down there. I actually had dinner with a man named Larry Beecroft, a lawyer, and not a bad lawyer, a good lawyer. He's the good guy. I haven't seen The Watchmen, but what we've done is we have utilized our resources. We've gone out into the public, and we have found someone who has seen The Watchmen, and he's going to comment, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jet Lacy.
Yes, good morning. I came around from the control room just to kind of talk to you here this morning, Rich. That movie is largely, I forget the name of the person who wrote the graphic novel. It's the most popular graphic novel ever. And it is about the Illuminati. You know, even one of the characters is named Moloch, and that's one of the, you know, the gods that they claim to, you know, sort of worship. And if you look at, there's certain things about there, like, you know, they obviously made a different angle. You know, they showed one of the other characters, you know, killing Kennedy from another point of view.
Wait, now don't tell us about the movie. Tell us your interpretation. What he was talking about was the groupthink, either and the use of force or threat, saying you as a society will conform to our beliefs or we'll bomb your ass.
Well, ultimately, what the movie is about is like you creating a huge disaster to avoid another disaster. You know, they bomb a whole bunch of cities, you know what I mean? And in order to save humanity, like, you know, what people accuse, like what happened with 9/11, they do these things like preemptive strikes in order to bring about the type of world order that they want.
Well, yeah, the same kind of mentality. I know I'm actually in the midst of hopefully finishing my little novel, and at one point, one of our military flunkies is looking at his commanding officer saying, "You mean we're going to kill these people to save them from hurting each other?" And that's the poignant question that comes up during that scene. And that makes good sense from a crazy perspective, because there are people who have alternative desires. They have their own ethics are so skewed that they think, and many of them, this is the dangerous part, they actually believe this crap, that they alone can solve the problems that they many times have created themselves. You know, it's like you give somebody $1 million budget and they screw it up, and so now you're $1 million in the hole. And there are many people who will say, "No, give us $10 million this time to fix the $1 million." And of course, you know what that's going to mean? It's going to be $11 million in the hole.
It's all really about the Hegelian dialectic. You create a problem, you create a reaction to the problem, you offer a solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what politicians do. They divide us up into groups, and the groups can be of color, of sex, of sexual proclivities, of religious foundations. You name it, the list goes on and on, because these guys have been at it for a while, these politicians. They divide us up into groups, and this is important. Then they pit us against each other, and then they offer to referee. See, that's their only way to be relevant. They've got a referee, and if they can't find a fight, they're going to start a fight. And we've seen that. Many people question what happened on 9/11. I certainly do, and I'm not a conspiracy kind of nut guy, but what I do know from my own physics background is what happened on 9/11 is not, could not possibly be what the government said it was. And now they offer no further comment, so we don't know. We don't know what happened. We just know what they said happened didn't happen. And there are more and more examples of this as we go on, and they just kind of seem to get blown aside. Well, folks, what if – now, and I'm just speculating – what if 9/11 was an inside job? Now, what if it was? What would we do? What if Barack Obama is not a citizen of the United States? What if – he is not qualified. What do we do? Many times people are afraid of the answer to that question. What do we do? Does Joe Biden become president? You know, they start going through all these wild, nonsensical gyrations instead of looking at the moral aspects or at the legalistic aspects in the case of the birth certificate deal. We don't know. And I think many people are afraid to confront that reality. But not our friend Bruce over in Ohio. Can we get Bruce on, please? Are you with us? Hello, Bruce.
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, just wanted to say that I believe the person who wrote the graphic novel was Alan Moore. I also believe that he was a high-level Mason, 33rd degree, and there are a lot of Masonic influences, a lot of New World Order inferences in it also.
Wait, the author was himself a 33rd degree. That's the highest level in one of the two branches of the Masonic Order. The Scots, I think, is only 10 degrees. Then the other one, I don't keep up on all that stuff. But so he wrote the book kind of exposing what's going on? Is that what happened, Bruce?
From what I understand, he wrote the graphic novel that they turned into the movie, The Watchmen. It originally came out in the mid-'80s.
Wow.
And so it was based on that graphic novel.
Wow, that's good information. I appreciate that. Well, what did you think of it? Obviously, it made an impact on your life. If you saw it back in the 80s and now here you are and remembering it, it had some impact on you.
Oh, well, no, actually, the graphic novel came out in the 80s and the movie came out last year. And I didn't know anything about the novel back then. But having done some studying about the Illuminati, the New World Order, the Anglo-American establishment, I did pick up on a lot of the subtle references that were made during the movie. So yeah, it's definitely a movie everyone wants to check out, and just to see what they can pick up from it also.
Well, you know, last night, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but long about 2 o'clock, I had finished up the work, and that's this morning. I had finished up the work, and I, doggone it, I got mixed up, and I thought I had seen the movie The Obama Deception. And I started watching it, and suddenly it was 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'm watching this thing. That was fascinating to me. I am going to check out a lot of what Alex had. He asserted a lot of things, I know several of them are absolutely fact from my own experiences. But I'm going to check out the rest because this puts together a picture that is just daunting. And I had hoped we'd get a chance to ask Bob, what is there a way to save us? And of course, Americans have this interesting idea. When they say, is there somebody who's going to save us, or if we eliminate the depression, they're suddenly out of pain without having gone through any more pain, which is an unrealistic one of those comforting lies, I guess, or comforting mythos that Bob was talking about earlier. We don't know. And I would suggest that we are at a Vujah Day moment in history, very literally, and I've had to remind people, no, je parle très bien français. I am aware that I changed the order, the Vujah Day, meaning we've never been here before. There are so many influences, so many unintended consequences that I think it's just out of control and that no one can predict what is going to happen next because we don't know what influence is going to hit us from the side that they didn't anticipate or we didn't anticipate? It's like the Illuminati, this ongoing thing, you know. And I'm just kind of generalizing with these groups, which I view, and they're very real, folks. If you don't think the Bilderbergs or the Trilateral Commission or the Committee on Foreign Relations, if you don't think these things are true, okay, welcome to la-la land. Now, what they are, that would be what I would question. In my view, they're just a bunch of frat boys with money who got old and got this megalomaniac sense to them that they're better than you. And they can only prove that by stepping on your neck. And that's what happens. It's a brutal world out there. As we talk about the ethics or anything along those lines, we've got to be careful, and I would urge our audience, please, just make your own steps, honest, legal, ethical. And when I say legal, you know, I hear these people all the time who say, hey, you got to pay your income tax and, you know, go to the Bible in Romans 3:16, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Well, I've heard that about a gajillion times. But, I'm sorry. I thought we were off the air. I thought we were, our caller is gone. Bruce, thank you for joining us. It really, as we go through life, I am just mesmerized by the wrong truths that people rely upon. I'm just amazed that we as a society have forgotten that our own actions is all that we can be responsible for. I mean, I just have a personal thing. I know my son was watching these repo shows on TV. They got this large, grotesque lady with all kinds of pokins and piercings and stuff. And she's a nasty-looking individual. And then they got Mr. Glassjaw. He's a big, buff guy who has gotten into fights. He drops like a stone. And, you know, he's a big, big tough guy. And when he gets hit, he goes, boop, boop, down like a little baby. Wah, 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 please don't hit me no more. You know, to people he's coming to steal their cars from. And my son's saying, well, they didn't pay their note. Therefore, they deserve it. And he's talking, of course, about the car owner. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Who let you step in so that you could say you're just following orders? You can't be part of something unethical and not take responsibility for it. I have zero respect for those kinds of people. I have zero respect for those kinds of the debt collectors, the guys who call you up on the phone and they want to tell you owe them money and all this nonsense. I have zero respect for anybody who would work at the IRS. I have zero respect for anyone who works at the Federal Reserve. And people say, why? Well, because if you would work for Satan himself, then you better be prepared to call yourself his bedmate. You can't excuse yourself by saying, I'm just a secretary for the IRS. Nonsense. You work for an evil organization. And if you don't take responsibility, if you hide behind those kind of little poofy lies or little clouds that you want to put up to make your own ego feel better, then knock yourself out. But you are in delusion. You participate. You are part of it. Now, many people go along and they get involved in these things, these evil plots with evil organizations, evil corporations, other evil people. And then they try to excuse themselves because they were not the ones giving the order. They were just, and let's see if we've heard this before historically, following orders. Just following orders, sir. That's all. It was not my fault I cut his head off. I was ordered to do it. I'm just a flunky. Nope. Sort of like Sergeant New. If you remember, our good friend Sergeant New, the man who refused to wear the blue, the UN uniform, because the Constitution says no. Well, ultimately, we all know, we saw in the newspapers what's going on. There have been several people who are questioning whether or not they have the ethical right or duty as a military person who is trained to follow orders without question. Do they have the ethical commitment to not do anything unethical, regardless of who said it, short of God himself? We'll be back for the final segment in just a few minutes here. This is Barry Hess, sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. Call in number 800-313-9443.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're back for the final segment here. This is Barry Hess hosting for the vacationing Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. I want to remind our listeners tomorrow, have some good stuff lined up for you again. I don't know how we keep doing it. It is amazing, isn't it? But we're going to have one of the editors of the Las Vegas Journal Review, Mr. Vin Soprinowitz, a well-known libertarian, also a columnist. He is a regular columnist, and he does his newsletter called The Libertarian, of course. That'll be in the first hour. And in the second hour, we're going to have an Arizona candidate for Congress, a libertarian named Nick Coons is going to be joining us, and we'll get to grill him, have some fun, and see if he really is libertarian, or is he just glomming on to the rising political star. Folks, I just wanted to kind of make sure that you're here and get ready for that. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I was surprised very pleasantly and pretty immeasurably by our friend Bob Poldowski. You can read his writings up on freedomsphoenix.com, and that's freedoms with an S. And you'll see many of his postings. You can even put him in a search up there and get to see him. Of course, make sure you get there and always, always make sure you pay attention to the Republic Broadcasting Network, bringing you the truth, uncovering the secrets, and exposing the lies. And we've had a great conversation here today. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things in the news for you. Unemployment now, the officials are saying it's at 16%. And that's the official number, folks. So you can bet it's closer to 25 or 26%. We have already surpassed the Great Depression. And so now here we are in the Greater Depression, and they're trying to deny our way out of it. Folks, if you think this depression is going to clear up overnight, so I would just urge you to think about just one thing. Can you have a jobless recovery? Can you have any way of getting out of the depression before everybody's back to work? And the answer is no, you can't, because they still can't pay their bills. They still can't stimulate the economy. And that goes hand in hand with my own little premise that if we simply eliminated the personal income tax We would put money back into every sector of the society. Transactions would occur, and it would be like jump-starting the old Corvair. You know, give it a good push, and it'll go. Unfortunately, what Obama has done is much like they did with the stupidity over in Ethiopia and Somalia and Biafra during times of great famine. They want to impose upon you by showing you little fat-bellied kids to get you to send in their money and send in your money. And that's grateful. We're all good-hearted human beings. We do. Sally Struthers got the best of us. That's okay. But realistically, we didn't solve the problem. We fed them for today, but they're going to get hungry tomorrow. And in fact, I think one of the greatest answers came from a very irreverent comedian. I didn't like his religious material. A guy named Sam Kennison. And he said, hey, you want to solve the problem in Ethiopia? He said, point it out. They live in sand. You know what grows in sand? Nothing. You know what's going to grow in sand? Nothing. So instead of feeding them, his idea was he'll hire a U-Haul. Let's get your stuff and get you packed and get you off to where there is food. Let's end the famine. And that makes sense. Let's do it economically, too, folks. Let's throw the bums out. I know somebody's out there going to say, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But yes, you can, because this is Rosemary's Baby. Gotta go. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow, so get your pencil and paper. This is Barry Hess signing off for Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence.